Welcome to another Countdown to Eternity. On today's exciting episode, Pastors James Geddes and Tom Hughes will discuss Israel's recent airstrike. Next, Iran's consulate in Syria. What does it mean? Does it have any relationship to Isaiah 17? What happens next? And who is affected by this? We'll answer these questions and much more right now.
Well, hello, my dear brothers and sisters. I want to welcome you to another episode of Countdown to Eternity. And today, we have got quite the show planned for you. Hot off the press, as we're recording on Monday, you're hearing this on Wednesday, we see the headlines say that a senior IRGC general is reportedly killed in the Damascus embassy strike. Now, who strikes Damascus? Israel. That's an interesting conversation. We're going to talk about that. We are going to talk about a technicality that is tied to the Red Heifers. That's going to be an interesting conversation. And we're going to talk about a few more things if the Lord allows us to get to that point. I, of course, am with Tom Hughes. I am super excited about what we're talking about. Tommy, how was your resurrection weekend, bro?
It was great. You know what? Jesus rose from the grave. And he ain't there. I've been to the tomb. He ain't there.
Amen to that, bro. Amen. So listen, I'm going to start off by reading this article, and then I'm going to just pull right out of you your gut reaction to all of this, because this is just really interesting. I have so many thoughts going through my head right now. I want everybody to know, Tom and I have spent all of about 45 seconds talking about this prior to the show. We're just looking at the news story, and I think that it would be really fun to record a first reaction to this because there's so much to say about what's going on, and this is undoubtedly going to be a very, very, very serious game changer on a lot of levels, and perhaps maybe some people won't even see it, but we know, understanding the geopolitics of the region. So let me read this to you. This one is in Israel Hayyum. It says this. It says, Israeli warplanes allegedly struck the Iranian consulate in Damascus on Monday, and a Lebanese security source told this to Reuters. A senior commander of the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps, Mohammad Reza Zahedi, had been killed in the attack. Now, by the way, that's a big deal. If it is Mohammad Zahedi, it's a really, really big deal, because this is a guy that has very close ties and affiliations with Hezbollah, specifically Hezbollah in southern Lebanon. Okay, so that's a very, very important detail there. I think there'll be more on that to come. But it goes on to say, Reuters reports at the scene in the Meza district of the Syrian capital saw smoke rising from rubble of a building that had been flattened and emergency vehicles parked outside. An Israeli military spokesperson said, "We do not comment on reports in the foreign media." Syrian state television confirmed the consulate building had been attacked earlier. The Iranian media reported that a building close to the embassy had been hit, and Iran's student news agency reported that the target was the consulate and the ambassador's residence. Since the Iranian-backed terror group Hamas struck Israel on October the 7th, the IDF has ramped up airstrikes in Syria against Lebanon's Iranian-backed Hezbollah terror organization and Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps, both of which support the government of President Bashar al-Assad. Now, by the way, I think that this is really important to note this. Some of this information that we're reading right now is very preliminary, okay? So we don't know all of the facts that surround this. We're simply commenting on what we know and what's actually been reporting. So, Tommy, give me your gut to this, bro. What do you think about this story? And I know that anytime we think of Damascus and we think of attacks on Damascus, everybody immediately goes to Isaiah 17. But give me your thoughts on this.
Yeah, well, Israel has to deal with the Hezbollah problem. And, you know, they're routing Hamas, but Hezbollah is going to be dealt with. And, you know, when I was just there, James, we met evacuees in all the different places we were staying, and they want to go back home, evacuees from the northern area. So Israel knows they have a problem. What are they going to do about Hezbollah? They can't let them continue as they are. They're an enormous threat to Israel, much worse than Hamas was. Hamas is like a little kid gang in comparison with Hezbollah. So they've got missiles that can reach as far as Jerusalem and Tel Aviv. But mostly what they have are the rockets, but still they do have missiles. And you look at this and go, okay, Israel, let's deal with this. So who's going to be on the offensive? Is Iran going to strike Israel first? Or was this a first strike against Iran hitting an embassy? You know, this is a huge deal. It's not just, you know, another neighborhood or something like that, that they're going after with some terrorists in it. This is a huge deal. So when you look at this, will this escalate in the north? Now, I have no doubt also that Israel thought through, hey, what's going to happen? We have to deal with this problem. What are going to be the repercussions? How will Iran respond? What will Russia do? All these different dynamics. And of course, when you go into Isaiah chapter 17 and the destruction of Damascus, which I believe is still future, you know, some of our friends don't think so, but I believe it is, you know, this could easily be leading up to that place. Nevertheless, it's a matter of time before the trouble in the north becomes real trouble, and it is building every single day.
Yeah, yeah, I would agree. And I think when we have to talk about the destruction of Damascus, when you look at the technical side of what you read in Isaiah 17 and you do a little bit of language analysis, you'll begin to realize something very unique about the idea that everybody continues to project of sudden destruction. And that is the fact that I believe, and there's a lot of reasons for this, we don't have the time to get into it, but I believe that when we talk about the destruction of Damascus as described by Isaiah 17, we are talking about, in essence, a slow roll process. And let me explain what I mean when I say this. I think that what we're reading about, and I think we're actually seeing it coming true, right? What we're reading about is we're reading about a series of tons of attacks over time that weaken the infrastructure of Damascus as an ancient city as it sits. And then where we get the idea of something suddenly happening is there will be what I believe to be a straw that breaks the camel's back scenario, right? So think of it as it's taking a pounding, it's taking a pounding, it's taking a pounding, it's taking a pounding. And then eventually we'll see one event that will, in essence, completely flatten whatever is left of the infrastructure that's been destroyed again and again and again, and what is already understood to be a darn near junkyard, which Damascus already feels like right now, will be no more. And it's interesting because what happens with cities that take poundings like this is if they get pounded, there's always infrastructure that surrounds it to actually build it back up and to support it, right? The problem with Damascus right now is, and I believe this is just consistent with what I read, in Isaiah 17, the problem with Damascus right now is that Damascus is getting pummeled at a level and at a rate where all of the infrastructure that supports it in order to accomplish any type of rebuilding or repair is going quickly. As a matter of fact, one of the things that we talk about is something that we see happening oftentimes in not just Aleppo, but in Damascus as well, and that is the IDF, actually the IAF specifically, attacking with their F-35s positions in these airports, in these major airports, because of the fact that they're transporting all kinds of contraband. They did this very commonly during the time of the earthquake in Turkey. And so this is not a surprise to see the infrastructure that surrounds Damascus and is in Damascus begin to fail. We're only, who knows how many attacks away we are from seeing it being completely flattened, where it's no longer going to be repaired. But here's my question. Because considering this, I think that every single time we see an attack on Damascus, I think it sort of matches up with God preparing the theater that we know will be sort of the final circumstances in the geopolitics of the last days. But here's the bigger question right now, and that is, what do you see happening with this? Like, when you stop for a minute and you analyze this, what do you think is actually taking place, right? Because as we know, we know that the Hezbollah contingencies that are in Syria right now, as well as the Iranian contingencies, including the IRGC, are friends with Assad. We know that. They are sympathizers, which makes sense because Assad is a close friend of Putin, and Putin, of course, is on very good terms, not only with Iran, but he's on good terms with all the proxies of Iran, in essence, because he, in essence, by virtue of or by default of his position, has a lot of say as in what goes on. So where does all this play? There's a lot of moving pieces here, Tommy. What do you think?
Well, it doesn't play out real well. And we know, we all know the end, right? In the end, Jesus comes back, Israel's going to win. But that's still a ways off. What's going to happen between now and then? I believe something like this is on the immediate or the very near future. And I'll take us back to Isaiah 17. And this is what it talks about when it talks about the destruction of Damascus. Says this when you get to verse 3, the fortress also will cease from Ephraim, the kingdom of from Damascus, and the remnant of Syria. They will be as the glory of the children of Israel, says the Lord of hosts. In that day it shall come to pass that the glory of Jacob will wane, and the fatness of his flesh will grow lean. It shall be as when the harvester gathers the grain and reaps the heads with his arm. It shall be as he who gathers the heads of grain in the valley of Rephaim. And when you continue reading through Isaiah 17, a lot of people don't stop to realize that what the implications are. Israel goes after Damascus, finishes them off like you described. But the repercussions against Israel, Israel's going to have some significant consequences in the north. And that's the way everything looks like it is building. It started with Hamas in Gaza, but the real problem is the big problem in the north. That is what's happening. So and this is one of the reasons, James, why you and I look at this so often is because we see it building. Everything is going that way. Hezbollah continues to launch rockets, but they haven't gone to they haven't done a huge assault on Israel yet. The reason they've taken the civilians out of the northern area of Israel and they become evacuees in other parts of Israel is because Israel has to deal with this. So going after Damascus today makes sense because, listen, there's tunnels. I mean, there's massive tunnels. James, it was probably 10 years ago when you and I were talking about how people who lived in the kibbutzim up north, they would talk, hey, they can hear things underneath their houses.
Yep.
Where they live. That was probably at least 10 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
Even longer when you and I talked about that. So Israel's known these tunnels are there under the northern part of Israel. They could go all the way to Beirut is what one of the concerns is. And there's, I think it's over 500 miles they know of tunnels now in Gaza. How much more in Lebanon? And much of the tunneling in Lebanon is through bedrock. So This is a huge factor. It's not something that's going to be resolved right away, but Israel has to deal with it and there will be consequences. And according to Isaiah chapter 17, Israel will take significant hits in their northern territories.
Well, and it's I think there's one variable about this that's really important to understand. And this is especially important for people that are aware of geography. And if you're not aware of this geography, you need to make yourself aware of geography in the Middle East. It's really, really important because when you take a moment to examine what's actually happening in Lebanon right now, and you look at the proximity of Beirut to Damascus, there's a very important variable that exists there. As a matter of fact, if you were to actually look at a map of Syria and you were to observe where Damascus is in proximity to Lebanon, it is very close to the what I would call the eastern border of Lebanon, right? Right at the central portion, right? So this is interesting because we know that very close to Beirut, there is an extraordinarily strong presence of Hezbollah there. The only presence that's stronger with respect to representation for Hezbollah is going to be to the south, okay? But the second largest population of Hezbollah happens to be on the what I would call the central eastern border of Lebanon. And that's really important because if tunnels are being built the way that we know they're being built, the same way in the central part of Lebanon, on the eastern section, going into Syria, you create a significant variable that provides motivation for Israel to continue its attack on Damascus. And what's more interesting than this is from a militaristic perspective, from a military strategy perspective, if I begin to see a major problem brewing in central Lebanon, I'm going to deal with central Lebanon first instead of the south. And the reason why I'm going to deal with central Lebanon first is because if central Lebanon becomes an area paramount to the operations of Hezbollah, they now have a retreating position. And if they have a retreating position, you create a place, for lack of a better term, where they can regroup and recharge and come back collectively in through Syria. And further south, way further south, where you end up getting near Jordan, and of course, where you begin to touch Israel. And that's a huge problem for Israel. Israel recognizes it, and Israel knows it. If you're looking at a map, you're watching a map very, very closely, understand that when you get specifically near the area of the Golan Heights, your eyes are practically on all of those countries. You're practically looking at Jordan, you're looking at Syria, you're looking at Lebanon in some ways because you can see the little finger ridge that's at the north. And those are some serious issues. with the geography. So it would be in the best interest of Israel to attack Damascus if Damascus happens to be the outlet for all of the tunneling that's happening in central Lebanon. And we know that that's happening. We know it is, because the economic position right now in Lebanon is weakening and weakening and weakening. And I think, for the record, it's important to note that this isn't something that, like, they're keeping a secret, right? Beirut is constantly signaling to the United States how much help it needs because of everything that's going on there. Closing thoughts on this, bro. Like, where do you think this is going to end up going, this specific news event?
Eventually, we know where it has to go eventually. It's going to eventually go to this place with Israel's going to experience the repercussions. I look behind over your left shoulder, and we see the gold dome. And so, you know, what is going to happen to that dome? You know, I mean, you start speculating, would there be an errant rocket that's going to take that thing out? What, I mean, the threats that are coming, Iran, you have the Sunni Shiite issue, right?
Oh, yeah.
So you start looking at this, you go, okay, Hezbollah, Hamas, they're all proxies of Iran, regardless of where they are with the Sunni Shiite thing. Iran is Shiite, and yeah, they are violent, and they will use their proxies to do whatever they can. And I don't know if any of them actually care about the Gold Dome. They use it as a tool.
That's right.
As basically a weapon in their propaganda war. But are they willing to attack Jerusalem? Would the attacks go that far? Would Iran give the green light to Hezbollah to do something like that? So that's, I don't know if they would, you know, but they might, you know. So you get some Islamic groups upset about it if Iran does it, but then Israel would get blamed for it anyways. So I don't know, but the whole thing will come to a place where Israel will eliminate Damascus. We could be watching this could be a very significant catalyst in the development of this literally within the next few weeks. We don't know.
Yep.
You know, I'm hesitant to say it is, but so I don't want to say it is it, but you look, you go, this is a huge thing.
Yeah. And there are some complicated variables according to this. And I'll make a few comments on this, and then we'll kind of put it to an end, because I really want to talk about this red heifer thing. Believe it or not, when you start doing the analysis on all of this, it really does start with the southern portion of the Arabian Peninsula. You have to start looking at Yemen at the bare minimum, okay? And there's a reason for this. Yemen and what's happened in Yemen has increased the participation of Russia in the Red Sea. Now, it shouldn't be a surprise that Russia is moving around in the Red Sea, because obviously when you start looking at the geography that surrounds the Arabian Peninsula, and then you start looking at the eastern coast of Africa, you recognize that Sudan is a massive part of that area. And we all know this. Matter of fact, this is also true of Eritrea in some respects. We all know that on the coast of Sudan, Russia does have a very, very, very large base that is designed for maritime operations, okay? So this is something that is very important to point out. By the way, it is interesting to note the fact that the Russian vessels that recently were reported going into the Red Sea did not come from Port Sudan. They actually came from very likely what was the Persian Gulf or the Arabian Sea. And there's rumors that there's some coming from the Black Sea right now, but that's a whole other story. When you begin to realize that, you begin to consider it, that's Russia positioning themselves in a way to do damage control from what may be the destruction of the Yemeni Houthis as a result of a very angry group of people who are bothered by the disruption of all of the maritime events taking place, or all the maritime actions taking place right now in the northern part of the Red Sea, especially as you get closer to the Suez Canal. So it starts there. And so Israel is not going to be aggressive with an operation that sits in a place like Damascus outside of the airport without having a conversation with Russia. That's something that we already know about. But what's even more interesting is this is considered to be partially Russian sovereign territory by Russia, not by anybody else, but by Russia, and it's honored as such. So this has the potential, without me getting into all of the geopolitical implications, the geographic problem, this has the potential of lighting an absolutely massive fire. This could be a super big deal, a really, really big deal for a lot of reasons. And I'll probably later on this week provide some more exhaustive analysis on this when we get some more information. I want you to talk about something that really intrigued me. You mentioned this earlier, and I'm like, man, this is so interesting. Bro, fill me in, because this is like really important. fill me in on the red heifer and the idea of the red heifers being sacrificed on the Mount of Olives and what Israel just recently said about that and what you think about this and where this is going, because this is great. I'm going to sit back. I wish I could pop the popcorn and take a few bites, but this is amazing. Listen to what Tom has to say about this, you guys. This is really interesting stuff.
So Israel, the government of Israel said the red heifers, there is not going to be a sacrifice on the Mount of Olives. So I'm just saying it ain't going to happen. No matter, you know, I got lots of friends who are saying it's probably going to happen. It's probably going to happen. It's going to happen. It's not going to happen on the Mount of Olives. That's what I say. But what is a very real probability is, listen, the red heifers are being held in Shiloh, a.k.a. Shiloh. And guess what? I mean, James, you know this. We know this from Bible history. That is where the tabernacle was for how many years? It was most of it. It was like 300. How many years was it? It was
a long time.
So, in fact, when you read about the biblical history of Israel, a huge portion of it was all around Shiloh. All of it. Whether it doesn't matter what you're reading about, man, it is just loaded in Shiloh. That's where Samuel was. The tabernacle was there in Shiloh. So I look at this. Here's a real probability. The red heifer won't be sacrificed on the Mount of Olives. It could very well be sacrificed in Shiloh. Listen, they could put up a tabernacle there. Now, I want to say this. I want to be careful. I still believe Antichrist's temple will be on the Temple Mount. I still 100%, believe that.
100%. But
coming in the very near future, folks, a red heifer being sacrificed in Shiloh, that makes total sense, because it would totally allow Israel to start doing some of their worship that they want to do. They have a tabernacle there. And why not have Shiloh as the place of the tabernacle before they get the temple built? Because that's what happened before. Shiloh was the place of the tabernacle before the official temple was built by Solomon. We could be watching a redo, a part two of what happened in ancient Israel. And the red heifer, why would the red heifers could very well be sacrificed in Shiloh. The government didn't say they couldn't be sacrificed there. It might cause some uprisings, but it will not cause as much of an issue as if they sacrifice this on the Mount of Olives.
I mean, look, Numbers chapter 19, right? Verse 4, and Eleazar the priest shall take of her blood with his finger. This is heavy, right? And sprinkle of her blood directly before the tabernacle of the congregation several times. But I mean, it's the tabernacle. This is very interesting.
Yeah, it's the tabernacle.
I mean, bro, that would explain a lot. If that actually happened, it would actually explain a lot. And it's a very interesting, it is not a theory that you should throw away.
Oh, I'm not going to throw it away, because even if it doesn't happen in this Passover, I mean, listen, the red heifers, from what I understand, could be sacrificed any time of the year once they hit the age of qualification.
That's correct.
Which they've already arrived there. All of them have. So yeah. You look at that. And you look at a tabernacle. I mean, to me, this is really exciting, because could you imagine, James? I mean, I love going and visiting Shiloh, taking a tour group there. But to see the tabernacle there, that would be a mind blower for me. I'd be going, we live in amazing days. So it would not surprise me, because to me, it would be another sign, like God saying, hey, how much more do I have to prove to you the direction that things are going? We've got this going on in Israel, and now we have a tabernacle there. It's like God giving another warning sign. Look, wake up. Things are moving this way. So I don't think any of these things are coincidence. And I'm not saying the tabernacle will be built. It's 100% certainty, but I am saying I would be looking at it, folks, as a very possible next step for the Temple Institute and them who want to build the temple.
You have me rethinking a lot of things, at least on that level, because that is a very unique and distinct possibility. And quite frankly, it would actually match the scriptures even closer.
Yeah. I mean, what is there scripture that would say, no, that's not going to happen? No, there's not.
No. And there's nothing that actually approximates the location of Mount of Olives either. All right. Well, we ran out of time. On behalf of Pastor Tom Hughes, this is James Cadiz. We love you. Thank you so much. And what an honor it is to be participating in the Countdown to Eternity with you guys. God bless you.
You're listening to Countdown to Eternity with Pastors James Cadiz and Tom Hughes. Look for us online at countdowntoeternity.com. You can replay this episode at countdown2 eternity.com or listen wherever you get your podcasts. We're also at oneplace.com. I should also mention Pastor Tom's website. You'll find it at hopeforourtimes.com. Pastor James is on social media. He examines current events and connects what's going on in our world to Bible prophecy. Look for James Cadiz on YouTube, Rumble, and Instagram. Or just go to jamescadiz.com and start watching these videos today. Countdown to Eternity is listener-supported, and if the Lord is leading you to support what we're doing, a good place to go is countdowntoeternity.com. There you can make a secure one-time or ongoing donation to the ministry. Again, countdown, the number two, eternity.com. Have a question relating to Bible prophecy or want some prayer? Send that to us in the form of an email at countdown, the number two, eternity.com. Then join us next week as we continue the Countdown to Eternity. Countdown to Eternity is brought to you by Calvary Chapel, Signal Hill, and made possible through the support of our listeners.